Welcome to the Healing Ourselves, Heals Our Hoods podcast with your own Desiana Torres. This is a place for humbled, open, and transparent conversations with members of our own community. Here you can find diverse testimonies of the oppression and trauma faced on both individual and community levels. Do you want to validate the suppressed emotions you've never had the opportunity to speak about? Interested in breaking the silence? Then let's validate all that you feel right here, right now on this podcast. Let's go. So what's up, everybody? We are starting a new series this month. This month is going to be something that we are going to be talking about, Hood Made. It is a new series that talks a lot about the community violence and the community just experiences that we have in our hoods that don't really get advocated much, don't really get talked about a lot. And so if you grew up in the hood, you know it comes with some life experiences that are kind of hard to talk about, right? And so the life experiences definitely can alter the way that we function, the way we develop, the way we think, the way we move, the way we hustle, the way we create. It's just, I feel like there's so much good that also comes from it. And most of the times when you hear about the hood, it's only so much stigma and the violence that people focus on. And so today we're going to have a special guest who's going to join us, and we're going to be able to really get deeper into those conversations and really start reflecting on those life experiences that we have. And so a lot of us manage through that. And so what I would love for us to do is begin to illuminate the struggles that we normalize as our own. So many of us think that the struggles that we have in the hood are independent struggles. Like, it's our own individual struggle. And what we want to talk about this series is starting to open up our eyes to see that this is more of a collective struggle, right? This is systematic oppression that exists all around us. And these conversations are here to really bring forth that information to our people who may be internalizing that oppression and making it seem, or maybe taking it in as their own. And so I do want to acknowledge something. Our announcements is more so to acknowledge that we as a nation just celebrated Independence Day. And while the fireworks decorate the skies and the barbecue food is good, I want us to really remember that independence is something that we still fighting for. And so I want us to answer the questions: what does independence mean for us? Who is neglected? And who needs advocacy and attention during this time? And these are just questions to ask ourselves so that we can keep pushing forth the progression and the goals that we have as a nation to really make sure that, you know, we're not just celebrating stuff that don't really apply to everybody. And so I am going to be met with a special guest who I'm going to introduce right now. His name is Shimon Wright. Shimon Wright, he sought his experience as a youth growing up in East Oakland, California, too. He was surrounded by drugs, gun violence, poverty, and also engaged in like an approach where he wanted to really highlight blackness and put culture first. And as a black male himself, he was a foster youth who got kicked out of school districts due to educational experiences that were not affirming to his identity and lived experiences. He also has experience being incarcerated, and so he's going to be able to kind of highlight those systematic oppressions that exist in our communities that don't really get talked about, but that impact so many of our cousins, our brothers, our sisters, our fathers. And I'm really excited to have him here. So Shimon also was able to turn it all around. He graduated from Antioch High School 2011 and received a full ride football scholarship to UC Davis. He majored in sociology, organizational studies, and he received his BS in 2015, as well as his master's of art from the University of San Francisco in higher education and students affairs in 2021. He will also start his doctorate program this upcoming fall at San Francisco State University in educational leadership. So he's really doing a lot, pushing for a lot, and just having him here is going to highlight his own organization that he created. So he is also the founder of the Bridge Builders to the New Generation Incorporation, which is created to bridge students together from underserved communities in Antioch and allow for them to have that access to leadership, to have those opportunities, to have those conversations about college and also those life skills. And so what's really cool is through those enriching programs that he has created, he seeks to help students to remain engaged and to build that network of support and family and validation and helping us reach the younger adults, y'all, because it's really where our younger people are that we really need to be pushing for a little harder for, so that they can continue to push forth that vision and that progression that we want to see in our society. So, Shamon, I know I seen you here. I'm going to go ahead and add you in. So, y'all welcome him in with a bunch of hearts, a bunch of, like, anything. There we go. I start seeing him. Let me go ahead and add him. There it goes. So, we're going to be welcome with his presence real soon. And so, are y'all excited for this series? Because I kind of am. I need to drink some water. I might be talking too fast, but I'm really, really excited. Shamon!
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I can't complain. You know, me and my man Artis, we in Arizona right now. Artis just bought some property out here.
Wow.
You know, so I contributed a little bit to, you know, him buying his first property. So we in Arizona right now. Actually, he's working out there on the house.
That is so bomb.
I'm
so excited to hang out and talk together. I think that friendship that y'all build is really more like family.
For sure.
Kind of how I felt when we all lived together in college. It's always something that we kind of knew was going to be a long-lasting friendship. But I'm really happy for him as well. But more so for you still being a support of him too and his goals and dreams and aspirations.
Most definitely. No, I'm so proud of you just for creating this platform, you know, and just you just keep pushing and persevering and doing what you're doing and being that shining light. You know, I love it. I love seeing you do what you're doing. For real, I'm so proud of you and I'm happy for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I think today people are going to start realizing why we push so hard. You know,
Definitely. Yeah.
Experiences that we had that we used to talk about in college, but now we're expanding it to be more of a community conversation for folks to be able to join in on that as well. So I know that this is a new series called Hood Made. I know I kind of reached out to you a couple months ago and you were down from the start. You was like, oh yeah, put me in it.
Anytime I get to talk about my story and just, you know, my everything that I had to endure in life and where I had to get to, you know, to this point, you know, I'm going to share it because there's somebody out there that needs that nugget to keep moving, to keep pushing, you know, whether it's for them, for the kids. And so, you know, for me, I'm going to keep giving out that game.
Yeah, and that's what's needed because that game ain't getting passed around. I feel like it's a lot more distractions now rather than game. So I'm excited for you to be able to share your wisdom. And so the first question that I have for you, since it's Hood Made, what does Hood Made mean to you? Like, what comes to mind when you hear that?
So Hood Made, for me, it's personally like being authentic to yourself, right? Like we have a certain swag that we carry that's very intimidating for a lot of people. And when I think about Hood Made, I think about all my friends that are back there either incarcerated, that wasn't fortunate to live another day. And we carry that, you know? So when I show up in these meetings with CEOs that are millionaires, whatever it is, they see my brother who's incarcerated, who's doing life. They see my other brother who's doing some time right now as well. And so they see me and they see a representation of them. And so when I carry my dreads, you know what I'm saying, my hat, when I go into these meetings and I dress the way I dress, I let them know that I'm a product of that environment. And I'm carrying all of those other people that weren't able to make it. So, you know, for me, when I think about Hood Made, that's how I see myself every single day. Like I'm a hood scholar. And I get that from my boy, Dr. Ishman Anderson. Shout out to bro. But we always tell everybody, like, we hood scholars. You know, we get down. Like, you can call us nerds all you want to, but we got that hood tendency, too. So every single day we carry that, every single day that we step foot into any educational spaces, when we step foot into big corporations, we let it be known that, you know, I'm not going to buy to the white ideologies of what success looks like, or you're not going to tokenize me as a black male. You know, you're going to respect the environment that I came from. And so that's how I see Hood Made, and that's how I get down.
I love it. It's you highlighted it so perfectly, and I feel like everybody has their own definition too, which is what is the authentic part of it, because it comes from how we represent it. But I love that you say that when I show up in spaces, I'm not just representing myself. You're representing a community of people who are normally judged and looked upon differently based on their dreads or based on their appearance or the way they talk or the slang that they use, right? And so it's allowing for people to see that, y'all, we can come from the hood and talk like this and still be here. Like, we sit in these seats, right?
Yeah.
So that's the beautiful part about it, because I feel like a lot of times what I noticed is, like, when I started going to college, I learned how to code switch. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I how to turn off my authenticity and show up in the ways that I felt like they wanted me to show up, just so I could feel like I was a part of it or that I was worthy of it and things in that sense. But I felt like that took away from my authenticity. Mm-hmm. And it silenced the people. It almost made me feel like I was putting up a mask to cover up the people that do look like me, do talk like me, and that can also be represented in that. And so I just wanted to shout that out, that you highlighted that, because that's the beautiful aspect of it, is being able to show up in spaces and be like, yo, we got college degrees and master degrees, and we still talk with the slang. Like, it's cool, you know?
No, that's real, though. And I think you hit it on, I think everybody, especially if you first generation going to college, a lot of times we get taught to code switch. We get taught to, we got to abide by these white ideologies of what success looks like for a successful black or brown, male or female. And so we all go through that. And I feel like, you know, when I graduated, like, you hit corporate America, you like, oh, you got to dress up in a suit, tie, you got to talk a certain way. And I realized that what happens is, like, from the time we step foot on K through 12 education institutions, it's like our culture gets eradicated. You know, they want us to really what we call white mainstream English. That's what they teach us. You know, they want us to go ahead and be like, okay, this is how you write, this is how you read, this is how you talk. And so a lot of times it's like we get like in our head, it's like, okay, like in order for us to be successful, we got to talk white, or we got to talk proper. We, you know, there's no success if you have any type of slang or if you carry your culture on your back. And so, you know, I always get my boy Dr. Ish, you know, he's from West Stockland, from the Killer 20s. And so, you know, I always give Ish a shout out, because, you know, he really, for myself, he really let me know, like, hey, bro, like, go ahead, be yourself all the time. Like, you know what I'm saying? Fuck what they talking about. Like, be yourself. Like, and so once he allowed me to do that, shit, I'd be walking into meetings and shit, like, you know, and people are like intimidated because they're like, damn, like, this brother over here is looking this way, but he's getting his doctorate. You know what I'm saying? Like, he surprised me in so many different, and he has 3 different businesses. So it's like, when I step foot in those spaces, it allows me to have that confidence where I get to bring my culture. And that's one thing I try to teach my students. Like, look, I understand in different spaces, you might have to move. Like, I can't talk to my best friend the way I talk to certain people, but you still be yourself in those spaces. And that's what I try to tell my kids all the time. Like, look, be yourself. You know what I'm saying? Don't let nobody change who you are, because it's more than just you when you step in those rooms. So
that part. And it makes it more real for others to see themselves in our shoes, too.
Yeah.
I remember when I first stepped foot at UC Davis, and I sat in a classroom at the science lecture hall, that 500 plus, that big old lecture hall.
Yeah.
Turning around and kind of like, let me go through, see how many, you know, Latinx people I see and how many like black folks I see in these classrooms. And I kid you not, it was like 2 black people. And then this is based on my opinion, you know what I mean? But it was about like 5 to 6 Latinx, and the rest, it's a 500 sitting thing. The rest was white. And I'm just like, damn, like how are they talking about these institutions are so diverse for us? And then we could feel like we belong here, but yet like we feel almost intimidated that like these seats ain't for us, you know what I mean? And so sometimes you're right. Sometimes there is that pressure that we have to engage in this professionalism that allows for us to almost assimilate to what that culture is, that white culture, or that progressive culture, that rich culture. But in reality, what it does is it does strip from us. It does strip our culture, and it does strip our purpose, because I don't know if you felt the same way, but when I was sitting in those seats, there wasn't a year that I was like, I'm going to drop out. Like, I'd rather just go back to the hood and just live with folks that I feel connected to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's really, I felt that way all the time. You know, I tell people the first time I ever faced racism was at Davis. First time, like, for me, it was a culture shock. You know, it was something that I was intimidated by. You know, you have all these white people that had a lot of money, that went to private schools, that had tutoring, and you got me that, you know, like 4 months prior to me going, or 4 years prior to me going to Davis, like I was incarcerated. You know, I went to exposure schools, all the middle school, you know, and I'm getting in trouble, and, you know, I'm on probation, on ankle monitor, whatever it is, and now I'm here with all these white people, you know, and so it was so different. And I just felt intimidated. I felt like I didn't belong. And every single day I felt like, look, if it wasn't for football, I probably would have been gone. And that's why I respect people that did not play sports, that went there. I'm like, yeah, y'all is a little different. For me, I'd have been left that place. So I'd have played sports, I'd have been gone.
that part, because it's almost as if, I know that football was a huge part of your life, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I felt like being able to have the privilege of working for the football team, I seen how much work went into the field, off, you know, off the field and stuff like that. And so you're right, it definitely, I felt like it did take a lot of time, but it kept you, I mean, in my opinion, it helped kept you focused and like envisioning something that was bigger than what we were ever accustomed to.
Yeah.
Like you said, a lot of folks were, especially coming from East Oakland and even Antioch, there's not a lot of folks like us who make it into those college classrooms or who make it into those football fields. You know what I mean? Like those are very slim. And so I wanted to go deeper into like, what do you feel like those barriers are in our hoods that impact students from being able to achieve and get there?
Okay. Yeah, no. So I think, so, you know, for me personally, I feel like the biggest thing is understanding our identity and mm-hmm. taking ownership of our identity. I feel like a lot of times growing up, especially for young Black males, young Black and brown males, when you look at your community and your environment, you might come from a single parent household, you might live with your grandparents, whatever that case may be, but you're trying to get this money, right? You're trying to find a way how to get money. You're trying to make it out your environment.
Absolutely.
So the thing is, when you turn on the television and you see people that are dribbling a ball, scoring a touchdown, that are rapping, that are comedians, whatever it may be, that are making millions of dollars, it's like, I'm trying to find the easiest and the fastest route for me to make millions of dollars. And this is what I see. And then when I open up the door and I see people that got money in my community, it's like they hitting licks, they selling drugs, right? They doing other things. So it's like, you don't really have too many options that you're aware of. And you know, for sure, your parents probably didn't go to college. Some people's parents might be on drugs. Some people's parents are incarcerated. So you don't really know much, but all you want to do is make it out the hood. So you try to grip your identity based off of what you're being shown, whether that's sports or whether that's getting involved in the streets. And so for a lot of our young people, it's like they don't even see all the opportunities out there for them.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I felt like, man, like I'm going to make it out. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to play sports. But because, you know, we grew up in poverty, because my pops was in the pen, you know, and my mom, we were getting evicted out of everything. Like I had to hit the streets too. You feel me? I had to get some money some way. And so a lot of people, like there's so many people that I know, like RP to my partner, Jeremiah, but bro ended up hitting the lick when we were like 15 and he ended up getting killed in the process of it. And so there's a lot of people that end up, you know, getting killed, dying, you know, in the process of getting incarcerated. And so we try to grip our identity based off of what we see around us. And we're not able to expand that. We're not able to have anybody in our community that made it out to come back and to really give back. The only time you see people giving back is either they're athletes or they're entertainers. But people that even, you know, went to college and made it out, they ended up like, oh, I'm never coming back to Oakland. You know, I'm never coming back to the hood. I'm going to go ahead and live with these white people. Like for me, I live in Oakland right now. You know, I came back to the town. You know, I live in the Dub. So it's like, for me, it's like I want to be engraved in the community of my people. You know, I don't want to sit there and be like I'm anything bigger. But anyway, that's a little bit off. But anyways, I feel like a lot of time our young people, they're losing their identity in what everybody says success looks like for them.
That's so real. And you touched on a lot of barriers that a lot of us have internalized as our own. You talked about poverty. So many of us, especially coming from the hood, we don't like to acknowledge that we struggle, that like we poor. You know what I mean? So many of our people would sit there and stunt like the newest Jordans to kind of prove that point of, look, I got it. You know what I mean? But they bills ain't paid and they got that 30-day notice on the door. And it's like, it's a real struggle that so many of us face in the hood, especially when it comes from poverty or broken households in terms of like family members being incarcerated and not able to financially help support the family. You know what I mean? And so I love that you touched on those things, because you're right. It's almost in a sense of what it's what I learned in school is the ecological systems theory. And that's a big theory. That's a big word. So I'm going to break it down for those who don't know what that means. But it's basically like understanding how people can become products of their environment. Right. So almost being socialized to understand that the hustle and the survival that we pick up is really the hustle and the survival to survive what we are going through. Right. And so I remember in my high school, my mom used to always be like, you better take your ass to college. And I'm not gonna lie, my mom was strict. Like, I get my ass whooped if I brought her home lower than a 3.5. Like, she was not playing. Right.
So I love it.
For me, what was hard for me to understand is like showing up to classrooms when all my peers were high, drunk, cutting class, having sex, like just not really focused on the education aspect of it. So for me, I felt like I was missing out. Like, what am I doing? Like, how come everybody seem to be not focused on school? Everybody out here having fun, and I got to sit here and make sure my ass don't get whooped so I can, like, you know, make it somewhere. And what I began to notice, because those people who were doing that were my friends too, you know what I mean? Like, it's no hatred towards that. I understand that struggle. And so what I started to learn is that, like, I had folks telling me, like, why are you trying to go to college? And I'm like, because, like, I got to help my family. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I want to become this and I want to become that. Mine was, I got to survive somehow and somewhere. And I'm being told that college is that way out. And so I had someone tell me, like, I don't have time to think about college because I got to make money right now. We trying to survive right now. So what does it look like for me to go away for 4 years and not, you know what I mean? Like, how does that equation don't add up for me to go away from my family for 4 years and in the institution that don't got some of that is hella expensive? And I can't, that, you know what I mean? How am I going to fund myself through that? So it almost seems like a lack of an opportunity for our people to really feel connected to even going to college because of that survival. And so I love that you touched upon that. I'm reading this book right now, and if you haven't read it, I really, really recommend it, especially since you're in education too. It's called Hope and Healing in Urban Education.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna get that.
And I've been like, because I do a lot of programming and stuff like that, I'm trying to like really, you know, understand things that, you know, there's so much research that exists already that isn't accessible to our people. And so what they talk about here is everything that we've been mentioning. I want to kind of touch on some things. So it says young people in urban settings have fallen prey to discriminatory practices, often have few opportunities to address the psychological harm resulting from persistent exposure to an ecosystem of violence. And it says that their experiences are not only traumatizing, but often have a profound negative impact on their sense of efficacy and agency. And so most times what we are seeing too is a lot of our folks are experiencing PTSD.
Yeah.
So can you talk about, I mean, I'm just assuming if you lived in East Oakland, you for sure seen some shit.
Oh, easy. You know, it's crazy because for instance, I saw my cousin get his head blown off when I was 10, right? And so there was times where I lost my speech. I had to learn how to talk again. I was having a lot of nightmares. I had to go to therapy. And so even in that process of me going through all of that, and I had to go to school the next day.
That part.
And I had to go to school. But when you go to school and people threw labels on me as like, you're a menace. You're not a good scholar. You're going to sit right here in this corner. You got too much energy. And I had to go to school. When I was in school, I can recall, like, I ended up getting suspended and suspended that day, which later ended up getting me expelled. And I was only in the fifth grade. And so, because I was so angry, I was so frustrated, I was so scared, but nobody understood. All they realized was that this little black boy is over here acting a fool at school. And so I feel like a lot of times what happens is the educators that are serving the community aren't actually serving the community. They're serving the institutions.
That part.
I tell people this all the time. I'm like, fuck the institutions. We got to get to a mindset where we are there to serve the masses and understand that these institutions have been created and designed to oppress these communities, right? And to not allow them to be critical thinkers and think outside the box. Like, there's so many institutions that have been set up for, you know, black and brown communities that does not allow them to think that there's more than their environment. And so when you have these educators that come to these communities and they're like, well, I'm going to teach in the urban school because I want to be this white savior, or I want to get like a loan forgiveness. So I'm going to teach in these Title I schools, but they're really not there to serve the community. Because what happens is after they're done teaching, they go back to their environment, they go back to their community, and they don't check in. I mean, I have yet to see teachers actually doing home visits, going to the projects, right? Going in the community, trying to find a way to actually serve the people that they're serving. And so for me, what happens is like, when you see some of these youngsters that have this PTSD that might've just seen their mama. I mean, I had students when I was teaching in Oakland, I had students that, you know, they watched their dad kill their mom. You feel me? And so there's different kids that's going through, like, mama's over here on drugs right now. And this youngster has to go to school. Like, they got evicted the other day. They don't have no food, right? It's towards the end of the month. They don't have no food. And so, of course, my man is, or she's over here angry right now. But you would never know that because you don't care or you're not investing in the community that you say you serve. And so after, like, and education in general, they have to get to a point, especially educational leaders, have to get to a point where it's part of the contract where you got to do some stuff in the community. You can no longer just come here and be behind this big ass fence and educate these kids, talk to them any type of way, and you don't know what they're going through at home. And so I feel like the thing is that we need to really work on that in our educational institution.
That part, because what we start to realize is these places that are supposed to be helping us are really impacting us and causing more trauma and really pushing us away from feeling like we could be connected to our education systems. Because you're right, I was at Fremont High School and we had a couple white teachers there who, number one, like, if you grow up in the hood, you already have a bias against white people just because of, like, the oppression we face, you know what I mean? So what was even worse is that the teachers acted on their bias.
Yeah.
There are times where they were penalized certain students of color over other students for the same shit. You know, us students, we recognize that. We peep that. We call our teachers out and be like, hold on, that's not right. And then what they do is send you out. You know what? You got to go to detention. You got to get to do this. And it's like, how does that really help me? That's impacting us. And so I know that oftentimes, you're right, they come in wanting to help, but more so wanting to get that benefit of being able to work in the hood without knowing what it takes to work there. Like, it's a whole different world in the hood. Like, people don't understand that this is not, like, kids are coming in from having to survive in the world already and their homes and their communities, and we come into a classroom where we're being taught other people's histories, not even our own history or the truth of the history. Yeah. And so before, it takes away from our identity, so we're not connected to the material already. And then not only that, but it also allows for us to feel really disconnected when we're being punished and penalized for our unhealed or untreated mental health from all that we experience in the hood.
Yeah.
Right. And so I know that most times what we learn is that term is more of a structural violence. And so in the book, they talk about that. It says they use the term structural violence to describe how structural oppression destroys and harms our communities. It says that he accurately highlights the ways in which racism, homophobia, classism, sexism, and other forms of systematic exclusion are embedded into social institutions and structures and harm our communities and groups in our society. It said that even researchers have found that untreated trauma can predict lower total verbal and IQ scores on standardized achievement tests and embed brain development. So what that means is there's so many students who are experiencing so many different forms of trauma in the hood, who when they go into the classroom and they're holding these standardized tests that's supposed to be ensuring that we get the material, and what we're not recognizing is that unhealed trauma is embedding our opportunity and our brain development to connect and learn.
Yeah.
And we penalize for it. They take more money away when your school test, when your test scores is low. You know what I mean?
Yep.
How do you feel like that continues? Because I know that you work in the education system now. So, like, how do you feel? Do you feel like that still continues to exist today? Because this is more so highlighting, you know, when we were students.
So... So it's crazy, right? So, you know, you look at, for instance, and I think some charter schools do amazing jobs, but why do you feel like this charter school is only in the hood? Mm. You know what I'm saying? And so the reason, so what happens is, and this is how I break it down. So, you know, when you have charter schools, it's so easy to target low-income communities and marginalized communities because we need a lot more resources. But charter schools is that they come into the hood. And it could be anybody that doesn't even work in education that wants to start a school to so-called help these kids with, whether it's STEM driven, whether it's racial bias, whatever it may be, to help these students. And so you get this person to start this school. And when they start this school, now what they're doing is taking money from the school district because now they're taking kids. And so when they're doing that, now it's like, this is another way we're taking money. But on top of that, I'm giving whoever the CEO of this school is all the money so they get to manage it however they want to manage it or however they see fit. And yeah. So easy to target these populations because growing up for a lot of our parents, public school is not the answer. You know, mm-hmm. Public school is where a lot of our siblings and our close friends, our relatives got pushed out ended up getting locked up and sent to the penitentiary. So when you see charter school, it's a form of a private school or a private institution for our community. So we send our kids there. And what happens is a lot of times they're getting taken away from the public school. And so there's so many different ways. There's so many, like, I call the public school the good old boy system. Because when you look at who's able to actually teach in there, first of all, you said it yourself, right? People that have suffered from trauma have lower IQs than a lot of other people that have not. And so when you want to become a teacher, you have to take the CSET, the CBEST, you got to do all these little loopholes and stuff like that. Well, a lot of our people, we don't do good at taking tests. Since we don't do good at taking tests, what happens is we get eliminated and we're not able to, you know, become a teacher. Or on top of that, it's like the pay isn't good. When you think of who's are actually teachers, the reason why is white women, because a lot of times white women are able to get off at 3 o'clock. They're able to pick their kids up, take the kids home, and they're able to go about their day. But a lot of times, and they have a husband or their significant other who is making a lot of money. But for us, it's like we got auntie, we got mama, we got grandma, we got everybody in the hood. So you telling me about $40,000 a year? Like, nah, I got to take my mom over here and need some money because she over struggling. She ain't got money for groceries. My brother's over here. They need some money. So the thing is that a lot of times our people aren't getting enough enough resources in order for them to excel in these spaces. And then on top of that, it's like the pay isn't good. So there's so many different factors that's coming on with our educational system that has really hindered our community. Because when you go to these rich areas, you don't see charter schools in these areas. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll see private schools. And on top of that, it's like they get the money. The money that they make and that's geared towards them is based off of property taxes and how much they make, you know, off the property. Well, in the hood, it's like we don't have a lot of people that own these properties. People are coming in, private investors are coming in like, okay, I'm going to buy some property in Oakland and I'm going to rent this off. So we don't have a lot of people that's owning these properties. So that's another loophole where it's like, all right, well, we don't have to give these communities that actually really do need these resources the money because property tax says something else. But yeah, so that's, I feel like it's always an ongoing thing. And I'm very observant of our community and like what's really going on around our community that a lot of people aren't able or aware to really recognize.
True. And do you feel that a lot of that comes from being able to go to college and kind of study some of this stuff? Because being a sociology major, you pretty much learn the ways of the world and why oppression exists and a lot of the stuff that we didn't have the words or definitions to put together when we lived in the hood without that experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, okay. So, I mean, you know me when I was in college, right? it's not the best scholar. And I say that to say the reason why is because when I was in college, I was just trying to survive, you know, and just having that going into survival mode basically my whole life and going to college, I was so scared to fail that I'd do whatever possible not to go back to my environment. And so when I was at Davis, it was like I was so more worried about like surviving. Like I didn't trust myself fully. So I wasn't even really aware of what I was learning. And what was actually going on in the hood, I was more so worried about like, bro, I can't throw this test. So however we're going to do this, we're going to make it happen. But what happened was as I started to get removed, like I started removing myself more and more and more from what was happening to me as a youngster. And as I started to really open my eyes and I ended up going to my master to get my master's. And the reason why I wanted to get my master's because I was like, I want to understand what actually was going on in my environment. Right. And I took that time. And so once that hit and I started driving through Oakland all the time, I started to see a lot of things that like and I started getting an understanding of, damn, like this is why every single day we woke up, we were so geared towards money and we was trying to hit licks and we was trying to find a way to survive. Well, you know, my mama needed money. You know what I'm saying? My daddy ain't here. My grandparents ain't here. You feel me? We in these streets by ourselves. And so it started to like make me understand that that's why every single day, all my friends were so geared toward, hey, bro, we got to make this money. Like, we can't work a 9-to-5. That's taking away time. Like, you know, I got to watch over my siblings. I got to do something else. So either I'm going to hit this lick, I'm going to go ahead and bid something, I'm going to go ahead and sell some drugs. You know, I'm going to drop out of school because I need to make money in this damn institution doesn't understand my community and my environment and don't understand the psychological development of a black male. So they're going to still teach me all this bullshit, you know, knowing damn well I'm hungry, knowing damn well we just got evicted, so I'm not coming to school today. I'm going to risk my freedom and run up in somebody's home so I can get a little bit of change and go about my business.
Yeah, and I feel like that has become that's the hustle that I was talking about earlier, right? It's almost like a survival tactic that we learn at such a young age that carries with us when we go to college. It don't stop. I think so many folks probably looked upon us like, damn, they in college, they got it, they figured it out. But what they failed to realize is we was barely surviving there too, especially like we didn't have the same access to resources or opportunities or financial like privileges as many of the other students there too. You know what I mean? Like me personally, like I come from a single parent household and my mother didn't have a high school diploma.
Yeah.
Having to raise four kids by herself with a low wage paying job, how dare I ask her, hey, mama, you know, I'm short $200 for rent. I didn't have that privilege. I couldn't be like, mama, can I borrow money? Or auntie, can I borrow money? No, they was calling me like, you in college, you got it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it taught me how to almost be in that survival mode too, even throughout my college. And I kind of hit it well because when you know how to like ball on a budget, I mean, you know what I mean? Like there's ways to stress $20 to last us a week. And so, but what that does is it takes away from the space that we have to really sit and down and study with our education. Like for me personally, like I had to work two jobs. Like I mentioned before, you know, I worked with the football team and I'd be there like 6 a.m. while y'all was getting taped, getting ready to like film. And then when practice end, I'll head to, you know, class and then I would rush to my second job. And so when I wasn't in class, I was at a job, whether the first one or the second one. And so oftentimes what I recognize too is that, I don't know if you used to see hella students just chilling on a quad, just laying there, reading books, tanning. And I'm like, damn, how the hell? I remember like in my book that I had, I think it's called The Quad. And I talked about that experience of asking people, like, how do y'all do it? Like, how do you have time to just sit here and chill? Because I'm like damn near rushing across campus to get to my job. To make sure that I got this money so that I could pay my rent and my bills. Or if my mom asked me for money for rent or something, like, I got it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so,
you're right. That struggle don't stop. That hustle don't stop when you're there because the opportunities don't change. Mm-hmm. The college wants us. They want our diversity, but they fail to be so inclusive to our life experiences. You know what I mean? Like, why is it that we as college students got to pay hella expensive ass rent and we ain't even got it? Like, you know what I mean? We barely had it when we was back in the hood and now we out here trying to figure out how to make stretch a dollar, turn a dollar, you know what I mean? Like make stuff. And so how do you feel? Because for me personally, that did impact my education. Like I learned how to write my papers the night before they was due because my mind wasn't focused on school like that. Like I was there, but I wasn't there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that really impacted my GPA in college. Because people think, you know, she hella smart. I barely made it. I mean, like barely made it.
About that thing.
Yeah. And so how do you feel? How can you best explain, or maybe for folks who are coming from the hood now who want to go to college, what would your advice be for those struggles that we faced and how they can, like, almost in a sense, be prepared for what's to come?
So I'll say this, and, you know, I think I still face this issue, but I still have this thing of survivor's guilt, you know, for me, like, I tell people, like, you know, I was heavy in the streets, so a lot of my best friends are either locked up or incarcerated, and a lot of them are, you know, ended up, unfortunately, getting killed. And so, you know, that weighed on me a lot. I felt like nobody understood me. I felt like I was very misunderstood because there was so much that was going on. Like, I remember there was times where I felt like I wish I could trade places with my brother today just so they could get, you know, just so they could be happy and so they could get away from being in that environment. And so I remember just feeling that way all the time. And I remember the first time I remember going to class in the city for my master's and just talking around all these people that had a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot of privilege, but had some more privilege than I had. And after that, I go back to the hood, you know what I'm saying? I'll be in Oakland with my cousins and, you know, we'll be sitting there, they'll be smoking. We'll just be sitting there talking about a lot of things and just observing that it's like, and just observing our conversation. A lot of it was grouped towards pain.
That part.
You know, a lot of them were just in that environment. They were stuck and they were trapped. And so the thing that I try to tell people is that, you know, for a lot of people, when it comes to going to college and going into higher education, the thing that you have to do, you have to follow your vision and your purpose. One thing, a lot of times we get so geared towards, I got to make money. I got to make money for my mama. I got to make money for, you know, my cousins, my auntie. Like, I got to get my mama off the hood. And so people will get into careers and jobs that they absolutely hate. And they like can't even fathom, like, how did they get themselves in this position? And going to that job every single day, what happens is a lot of people, they lose their identity and they lose themselves behind that job because they are not able to be their true and authentic selves. So the thing is that when you show up every single day, like, you have to go to a space and then be in a place and be happy with who you are. And you got to live in your true identity every single day. And so when you step foot on a college campus, the thing is that, like, any institution, when it comes to Black and brown people, right? But any institution is designed to break you. It's designed, whether that is, you know, prison, whether that is educational institutions, those institutions they're there to help you, you know, to break you. And so the thing is that we all have to understand this. God brought us here for a reason. And he gave us a purpose. He gave us a vision. And so a lot of times people get wrapped up into what these institutions want you to do, what, you know, your parents want you to do, but it's really what you want to do. It's what you love to do. And so for me, it's like I had to break out of every single institutional barriers that was placed, the way that I think, the way that I operate, how I move, to really follow my purpose and my vision. And so when you get to, you know, higher education, the biggest thing is that you have to always truly, first of all, be yourself every single day, and don't be intimidated by the other obstacles that are going on in the school, in the classrooms of, you know, all these white students that had private education, that had tutors. And also, too, it's like embrace your struggle and your process. So it's like you're working one or two or three jobs, right? Embrace that. Right, because that is like Desiana, right? Like, we, the reason why we're able to be at this this place and this pinnacle in our life and accomplish what we're accomplishing is because of those moments of us enjoying our process. Even though that shit was tough, we didn't understand it. It was hard. There was days that we might have felt like we were crying, or we might have felt alone. But the thing is that it's like when you embrace your process and you find beauty in the struggle, is when all of a sudden when you get some water on that goddamn seed, right, and some sunlight, you start blossoming into the person that God called you to be.
Yes, and I felt like that speaks volume to that Tupac reference of the rose being, you know, grown out of concrete, right? And so it's almost like we're being planted in these cracked-ass institutions that don't allow for us to fully blossom in a bed of, like, roses. We could see, like, you know, a garden across the street and be like, damn, that's hella beautiful. Like, I wish I was planted there. Like, I wish I could just naturally have all the water, the sun, and this and that I got. But then sometimes what's so beautiful is, like, it's what you said, find the beauty in that struggle. Because I'm not going to lie, like, coming from the hood did allow for me to stand out so much more in my college institution, especially when it came to, like, making friends. People were quick, like, where are you from? Like, you talk different. You know what I mean? Like, and then there were certain slang words that I would use. I think, like an example was my friend from college had came over, Sophia. She came to visit, and she was talking about, you know, her getting into a fight with somebody. She was like, you know, I fired on her. And they're like, you caught somebody on fire? And it's like, no. That means, like, I took off on them. And she's like, you ran away? They're like, no, like, you know. So it's almost like me and my friend had such a laugh attack because we're like, damn, like, we really got our own language. Like, we're different, and it's not nothing to be ashamed about. And sometimes those institutions do make you feel ashamed when they're telling you got to change the way you talk. You got to change the way you look. You got to take off. Because, like, for me, you know, everybody know me for my hoop earrings. And so when I was in college, especially presentation day, there'd be my professors would be like, you're not supposed to be wearing those earrings. They're unprofessional. And I'm like, how are hoop earrings unprofessional? I'm confused. Like, this is a part of my authenticity. Like, my folks from the hood wear these hoops every day. You know what I mean? And so it's almost like you said, being able to take that step back and really appreciate the hustle that we do build. Because people ask me all the time now, like, damn, Desi, how are you managing, like, working full time? You pregnant and you got your own business and you hosting these IG lives. And I'm like, this shit ain't no different from what I was doing in college.
It's same hustle, you feel me?
Like, I'm just so used to being able to navigate and just hold so many different positions, because at one time in one place it was out of survival. Mm-hmm. But now I'm at a place where I can do it and really blossom it and turn it into something that is going to create beds of gardens for other flowers to be able to grow outside of those concrete places, you know? And so I think what's important for us is to embrace our struggles, right? To be gentle with ourselves in that process, because so many of us are going to have that, like you said, you hold that almost that guilt mindset too sometimes. They're like, where we're like, damn, how come we made it and our folks ain't here?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we carry that guilt sometimes, but what we forget is, like, we did it so that they could. Mm. Like, we're here so they can be. Yeah. And it's being able to carry that mindset to allow folks to see, like, yo, people who look like us, who talk like us, can go into these institutions and survive and turn around and turn it into something that's more applicable for the younger generations to be able to go and see themselves there as well, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's the beautiful part about it. And so the next portion of this conversation I want to get into is highlighting your advocacy, because that's basically what you did. You building your better gardens too, right? And I want us to start talking about, you know, you are the founder of Bridge Builders, you know, Incorporation. So can you inform us of, you know, what is the purpose behind it? How did this come to be? Like, what went on in your head for you to be like, I need to do this?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, I always had a vision of going to the NFL, right, and playing in the league. And, you know, I worked super hard at it. And I gripped my identity based off of sports. Like, I didn't realize, like, sports wasn't who I was, but it was what I did. And so my identity gripped around that. So when I went to play arena football and all of a sudden it was like everything, when that was over and I came back home, I realized that it was over, right? Like, my football career was coming to an end. And I can remember being in a room, and it felt like 5 minutes felt like 5 hours. That was the first time in my life where I felt like my schedule was not structured. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, I ended up becoming a teacher. And when I was teaching, I felt like I was abiding by the institution. I felt like I was being a part of the institution. And I had this young man who's like my little brother now. He actually plays for the University of Nebraska. But I used to take this young man to school every single day. I was his teacher. I was his coach. Pick him up, feed him, whatever it was, right? And so I was really invested in the community. And I mean, in my little hoopty, right, my hoopty was full every single day, dropping kids off, feeding them, whatever it was, wasn't caring about no money, none of that. And and I could just remember just like, man, like when these youngsters, when they get older, what if they end up like me, right? What if they lose their identity, or what if their identity is gripped towards, you know, what success looks like for a young black or brown male, right, of being either an athlete or entertainer, like, what if they become lost? Because a lot of times people don't really realize this, but a lot of athletes that play Division I sports either commit suicide, they become addicted to drugs, or they go back into their environment and become a product of their environment.
Yeah.
Their identity around what it meant to be an athlete. And so for me, I was like, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to stop becoming a teacher. I'm going to stop being a teacher. I'm going to go back to school to get my master's. And so I ended up doing that. And I started this business because it was really geared towards making sure that we bring college and career access back to our community through social emotional support. Because a lot of times our young people, they don't even know why they getting in the fight with homegirl over here or bro over here, right? And they don't even know how to really navigate their emotion. And so a lot of time we teach them a lot of things geared towards understanding how to understand their emotions, understand that it's okay to feel that type of way, right? And we're going to take it this way. And we understand, like, we from the streets too. So it's like, mm-hmm. Also like, look, bro, if there's an issue where you got to feel protected, bro, you got to handle that, right? And I feel like that gives them that sense of, like, man, he really understands where we're coming from. You feel? Yeah. Because it's like, I understand different rules and different regulations when it comes to the streets. But, you know, so we really focus on college and career readiness through social emotional support. And so right now we're contracted with about 5 schools in NER, and it's crazy because last year I only had 1 school. And so because we was doing our work, you know, and I hired Johnny, hired my boy London, and we actually hired 4 more people as well. And so, you know, we're just really moving because this, our kids really need this. And they need to see representation of themselves. And I teach them to all of my employees all the time is that we got to be authentic. Like, bro, don't show up. Don't hide behind professionalism. We're not doing that. You know, like, you got to really invite them and get them an understanding of who you are as a person, because we're humanitarians. Like, coming into this work, like, you got to be a human first for them to build trust. And so that's really what we're geared towards in regards to really helping our kids. And we do a lot of classroom observations. So we hop into the classes. We see our kids are doing in the classroom. And if, you know, things are a little funky, right, with the teacher, you know, we type it up in the notes. We send it to the teacher and we have meetings with the teachers in regards to, look, the reason why my man over here tripping, bro, is because Mom Duke's done kicked him out the crib. You feel me? And so it's like, this is why my man is over here acting this way and acting this way. Like, and you not letting him turn no homework. That's an issue. You know what I'm saying? Like, and we start really breaking down. And, you know, I mean, sometimes discussions get a little heated because I feel strongly about these situations, you know? And so it's like, you don't really understand the community that you're serving. If you're not able to be empathetic to this young man or young woman's lived experiences, bro, like, this ain't for you, man, and I'm going to keep fighting for my students. So that's a little bit what we do throughout the day. You know, we do a lot of college and college field trips, so we believe that exposure equals expansion. So the more things we're able to expose our young people to, the more the mind's able to expand to that as well.
Yeah, I'm going to highlight some of the things that you said that I feel is essential for us folks to be able to take and, you know, continue to implement and almost, you know, kind of start that in our own hoods, because I feel like when we talk about the hood, is more than one, right? Oakland, East Oakland is one. Antioch could be another. It's so many different hoods that experience the same forms of oppression and trauma and more so barriers in education. And so some of the things you were highlighting were like being present. You like, look, my hoopty was full all the time. You know what I mean? Like, I was taking these kids to school. I was feeding them, almost like you understood that the barrier sometimes is poverty and parents not being available to really sit there and like drop the kids off or making sure that they're there safely. So, I mean, safely. So being able to be present in that way. But I felt like one of the biggest ways that we can advocate is explaining behaviors and reasonings to teachers about shit that the reason why stuff is really happening that they don't always recognize and see. So you said, you know, homie over here acting up because his mama just kicked him out. Mm-hmm. Or maybe family just went through a traumatic experience. Maybe homie just witnessed his friend get shot on the block and he got to come to school today, act like everything okay. And he's not okay. You know what I mean? So being able to advocate those struggles in the classrooms allows for that bridge, like you said, like being able to build that bridge between the disconnect in our education systems. And I think that's so beautiful. Yeah. You were also talking about the social and emotional support, right? To having students being able to navigate their emotions. Mm-hmm. That's something none of us had the opportunity to have. Like, yeah, my teachers, they send us out the classroom quick if we had an attitude.
For sure.
Because, you know, if we was misbehaving or detention or suspended, but that was causing more of a barrier to us receiving an education rather than them coming down to be like, yo, you good? What's going on? And I feel like that's the approach that is going to help benefit so many more students, because when we teach folks how to be in tune with our emotions, how to feel and not feel guilty for feeling the way we feel, it's okay to be mad. I feel it. I'd be mad too. But how can we go about it in a way that's progressive and maybe not harmful to other people around you? Like, it's okay to feel the way you feel. And so being authentic and not hiding behind that professionalism with the team that you're building and you're hiring right now, I feel is what is creating those beds of roses to be grown, because that's what we were lacking. When we showed up in our classrooms, we didn't have that. We didn't have advocacy, you know what I mean? And so my next question to you is, how do you notice this organization is playing as a bridge to the hoods and the struggles that you expressed you went through earlier?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is that our kids feel safe. You feel me? Like, they feel safe in the space that we created. We're still creating that family-oriented vibe within the space. But a lot of times it's like, you know, when you get kids to really come in, and I mean, our kids talk about everything to us. You know, they talk, I mean, because they feel a sense of safety, they feel a sense of community, and we know the rules of the community. So it's like, you know, for my kid to come in like, hey, you know, Mr. Wright, man, I just hit a lick for, you know what I'm saying, 300 P's, right, in the town, like, and I'm like, oh, wait, bro, like, you know what I'm saying? And so we're able to really talk about that because we're able to understand what he's talking about, like, and he's like, man, like, I feel what you're saying, but I need this money. And we're able to break down the logic of, okay, so you hit this lick, which is going to risk your freedom, right? And so we're able to break different barriers down for our young people that nobody else in the educational institutions are able to do because they're, quote-unquote, mandated reporters. So it's like, goes on, oh, I got to call the police, I got to call CPS, I got to do X, Y, and Z. But I tell people this all the time, I had to detach myself from the institution to come back into the institution as a different form. You know? So a lot of times it's like when you are part of, you know, and this is a question that I had a dialogue, and I'm actually doing my research on this too. But I had a dialogue with my students. I said, hey, do y'all feel like it's important to have either a black male teacher or a teacher of color in your classes? And they said, no. I said, why not? They said, because we feel like in regards, they still got to teach us the same way these white teachers got to teach us. They still got to do the same curriculum. They still got to grade our papers the same way. And if we're acting up in class or we're going through some, in our personal life, when we're acting up in class, they got to kick us out because they got to manage their classroom. You feel me? But they said a program like yours is way more needed than anything that any teacher could do, because you're giving us a space to really be authentic to who we are. Like, we see you, and when we see you in these meetings with all these people and stuff like that, when we see you in your classes for your doctorate program, it gives us a sense of like a strengths are, and it empowers us to be exactly who we want to be. So I feel like for that, just that process, and I try to tell people, like, I have students right now who are locked up for murder, you know what I'm saying, students who are locked up for other stuff. And the thing about them is that they realize that for them, they're able, like, I was able to plant a seed in every single last one of them. You know, if one of my kids was locked up for murder right now, bro called me, you know what I'm saying? We'll sit there, we'll chop it up on the phone. You know, his mom will call me, text me, whatever it is. But because what happened was, when he was an eighth grader, I planted a seed in him. Everybody. And everybody's seed is going to, everything's going to grow at a different time. And I know I can't save everybody. But the thing is, I plant this seed, and for some people, they're able to get some water on that thing a little early, get some sunlight, and they're able to blossom. But some people might have to go to the pen. They might have some time, and in that moment is when God's able to talk to them and go ahead, water that seed for them, right? And then they're able to get some sunlight. So everybody's process is different, and I feel like we have to understand that, especially people like us, because we are like, we want to help everybody, right? We want to help everybody be the best version of themselves. And yeah. Sometimes it's like when you see, you know, someone that trusted you, that believed in you, commit a crime like that, it's like, damn, like, did I fail him? You know what I'm saying? But yeah. Then I was like, no, like, you planted something in him. Like, you believed in him. You loved him. You know what I'm saying? Like, you gave him something that he was never able to receive from a black male before. And that's going to go somewhere, even in his lowest moments, you know? And so, yeah.
That's so real. I feel like that planting the seed portion of it goes unnoticed sometimes, because most teachers think that it's not worth, you know, planting seeds, because some folks just ain't going to get it. It's almost like they just give up before they even plant the seed. And that's where we go wrong, because we got to recognize it. No matter how fast it takes for people to get that water and that sun, it's going to come. You know what I mean? Their time going to come. There's going to be a moment in their life where they start reflecting and thinking back and being like, damn, you know, like, even though this is where I was, I still received that love, that genuine love, that genuine belief. And so I remember, like, for me, being in high school, I always had an attitude. I was like an angry, like, teenager, like, always, like, in somebody's face, ready to fight kind of thing. And I remember I had one teacher, and it's always that one teacher that I can, like, really connect to. And he pulled me out, and instead of kicking me out and, like, sending me to detention, he's like, yo, talk to me. I want to understand you. And that's the first time in my entire life somebody's ever asked me those questions. Mm. And that what it is creating that safe space where we can come out and really advocate and share where we, how we feel, or maybe even think about it. Because, to be honest, I didn't even know I was acting out like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But when he gave me that space, I'm like, damn, okay, so... He kind of, like, got me to act right. He, like, you know, I can't have you acting like this in my classroom. Mind you, I didn't grow up with a father in my life. So I instantly, like, got that fatherly figure from him. And he ended up being my soccer coach, too, right? And so oftentimes what we recognize is that all it takes is for one person to really plant that seed.
Yeah.
One person. But if you have a community working together, such as, like, the organization that you're creating, and y'all got a bunch of folks planting them seeds together,
yeah,
it's almost like y'all not just providing the seeds, but y'all teach them to water themselves too, because it's like one of them things, like, you can provide fish to people, or you could teach people how to fish.
Yeah.
Which skills gonna last longer, you know what I mean? And it's that teaching folks how to fish for themselves. And so more so what I think is really important to highlight is that our struggle is something that is undervalued, misrepresented, misunderstood, especially across many other platforms or higher educations. They look down on us like, oh, they test scores is hella low, but they don't understand, like, we just trying to survive.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's real. Like, you know, I think that's the biggest thing is that survival is key, you know, and I don't think people, I don't think that is that. I feel like, you know, have you heard of Terry Yoshu's, whose community has wealth? Like, she breaks down different, like, wealth and stuff in black and brown communities and stuff. But I feel like one wealth that she left out was for sure survival. You know, that's a different wealth. Because learning how to survive, like, even as an adult, I could think on my feet so fast because I had to endure in every, like, just to get to this point that I'm at, just to be my doctor program. I'm still going through some other personal stuff in my life, but just being able to survive allowed me to make it out of every single situation because I was so able to, like, think on my feet. And I feel like that's a wealth that our community, they don't give our community enough of. Like, people survive and know what it means to only get, you know, some food stamps, you know what I'm saying, $1,000, and you got to make that stress for 5 kids for a month. Like, that's a totally different skill that people don't talk about enough.
Yeah, no, and that's so real, and that's almost, in a sense, is what we got to go back and recognize the beauty in that struggle, too, because even though we didn't have it like that, we still survived it, you know what I mean? So I still ate, even if there were some days where it was hot dogs on sandwich bread, you know what I mean? Like, we still and I really appreciate this conversation so much. I know the IG live is going to end. I don't want it to cut us off, but I just want to appreciate you so much, Shamam, for being a part of this, being a part of just giving back to our hoods and our communities. The vision that you have, the passion that you carry is something that can be seen just by Instagram alone. So having people to have the space to hear you vocalize your vision, your dream, and your connection to the hood, I feel like, is empowering to all folks on here listening. So I just want to appreciate you so much for this.
Appreciate you. You know, and like I said, like, when we, you know, because, you know, I'm doing my motivational speaking as well. So we for sure going to do an event together. All right. What's happening? We're going to do something together. All right.
I appreciate you so much. And thank you to everybody who's been listening. Thank you for y'all who've been tuning in. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you again for tuning in with my podcast, Healing Ourselves Heals Our Hoods. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on your notifications for future episodes that will be full of authentic storytelling by members of our own community. You can find me on Instagram at CONFI_DEZ. If you haven't already gotten your copy of my poetry book titled The Becoming of Her, be sure to get yours today. We forget that reading is just as reflective and powerful. I'm sending lots of love and peace and light to you all. May we continue to heal ourselves and each other every day.